Hey, this is Doug Huggin, Jason's college roommate and longtime listener, getting ready for another epic episode of Surely You Can't Be Serious. Talk to me, Goose.
So then after I was mugged and beaten, before they left, they kicked me in the balls. And I thought to myself as I watched this movie, wow, that situation was almost as bad as this.
Hey, are you on a coffee break?
No.
Then let's podcast this MFR.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, where we are joined by our friend, gracious co-host, Jeff Johnson from the A Film By podcast. Jeff, how you doing, man?
I'll tell you how I'm doing. I'm not exactly burning doing a neutron dance today. I know what's on the docket.
We are going to have to really work hard to discuss the good points of Beverly Hills Cop 3, the movie that we're breaking down today.
So guys, we're back again. This is part two of our What the Heck Happened for 2024 season. We've done these a few times. We compared Jaws the Revenge to Superman 4. We compared Last Action Hero to Alien 3. This is where we cover movies that are not good. And we ask the big question, what the heck happened? And never has the question been so immediate in my mind as with this particular movie. Now, last week we covered Jaws 3D. If you got to see the 3D Jaws 3, if you're unfortunate not to see that. Today we're talking about Beverly Hills Cop 3. And I had not seen Beverly Hills Cop 3 as we concluded our last episode. And now I have, and you guys had assured me that it was going to be worse than Jaws 3, which at that particular time, I had a very, very difficult time believing. But let's get into it, talk about it, figure out which one of these two turds stinks more.
Hello, my name's Axel Foley. I'm looking for...
Hello, welcome to the Beverly Hills Police Department. To continue this message in English, press £1. If you have homeless people on your lawn, press *2.
So what brings you to California, Axel? Vacation?
I'm looking for a killer.
One, please.
We got some evidence that points to one the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You mean Rufus Rabbit has gone berserko?
You got yourself in the middle of a federal investigation.
That guy killed a police officer. He killed a friend of mine.
You just keep him out of my face and out of my park.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a tremendous surprise for Mr. DeWall to have me standing right next to him right now. You know, right now I can feel his body tingling.
Bring that man down.
Code red on the spider.
Now hold on tight.
Axel.
Hey.
Officers, I want this man arrested.
I'm sure you can explain everything, or maybe you can't explain anything.
You're going back to Detroit.
You've got to turn yourself in, man.
Why is it so hard for y'all to see there's something rotten going on at that park?
Kill him.
By your new look. Look
thank
at your
you
skin.
Much,
and your hair.
And then finally you have black hush poopies, which are totally retro, which I love. You put a really good package together.
The words that I'm longing to hear from you are, Jaws 3 is the better movie. I'm just putting that out there right now.
You guys will have to wait for final judgment, just like everybody else listening to this podcast.
Hey, we were listening, you know, the chat we had going, just hearing the vitriol coming from you about Beverly Hills Cop 3, we just couldn't wait to hear you say it. And you're like, I'll say it when it's time for final judgment. So I've been so excited for this.
So we're conducting this episode just a day. Just a day. OJ passed yesterday, right?
Yep, he did.
So, well, it was yesterday.
It was announced yesterday.
Okay. All right. So he's passed within the past couple of days, which of course brought up lots of GIFs and memes of Naked Gun.
Right.
And one of those memes is when he's in the wheelchair and Leslie Nielsen pats him on the back and he begins to roll down the stands of the baseball field. And then there's this obvious dummy body that gets launched off the top stands into the baseball park. And as I saw that gift, I thought, That looks just like the body off of Beverly Hills Cop 3 in the chase scene at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, that rag doll that they threw off the truck was just absurd.
Okay, well, let's get into it, right? I mean, let's quit patty caking around. Let's break this thing down. So Beverly Hills Cop 3 came out in 1994. It was the third in a trilogy, but it appears that part 4 is coming out sometime this summer, I believe. And
on Netflix.
We saw the trailer for it the other day. It looks pretty good, yeah. Right?
It looks good. I'm back on board.
You know? I'm not willing to say it looks good. I'm willing to say that it has potential to be good. They definitely have got some action in there that was sorely missing from the Beverly Hills Cop 3 movie. As far as the comedy goes, it was a swing and a miss on the trailer, but maybe they're saving the best in the movie, trying not to do spoilers. But I'm holding out judgment till I see it.
It looks similar to Beverly Hills Cop 2, where they lean
on
the action.
Which D is not
going to
be happy. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you and I liked it, right?
It's the sophomore goggles. You got to have them on. You know, we were teenagers. It had everything that a teenager wanted. And I agree with you. I feel like 4 is maybe a callback to number 2.
I agree. Okay, Jeff, I got a question for you.
Yes.
I'm pitching a movie to you in the summer of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mr. Big Producer, Jeff Johnson. This is what I got for you. I got the third in a very successful trilogy, one of the biggest movies of 1984, which may have been one of the best years for movies ever. We've got Eddie Murphy in the starring role. We've got John Landis secured as the director.
Yes.
And we've got the writer of Die Hard.
And 48 Hours.
And 48 Hours. And the $6 Million Man.
Let's mention the good movies.
He's written the script. John Landis is directing. Oh, by the way, he directed Eddie Murphy in some of his biggest hits, Trading Places and Coming to America. Mm-hmm. What do you think? You green lighting this one? You feel good about it?
This is an easy green light because all I see is box office gold. This is going to be like one of the number one movies of the summer.
Well, they did green light it.
They did.
And they said, we'll give you $25 million. And
23 of it goes to Eddie Murphy.
Right. No, but yeah. 15. Yeah. But 15. So just even in 1993 money, can you imagine being presented with what you've just stated and say, we'll give you less than double what we're going to pay the star of the movie to make your movie? You got $10 million to make a movie. Would you be pissed?
I would be a
Mel
upset.
Gibson throwing the ashtray into the wall. Like, what? What?
Right.
What are you telling me? 25 million? Do you know the history of this franchise? Even part 2, which really wasn't that good, made millions. How are you not throwing money at this? Well, there were a few things. Number one, Eddie had been in a handful, three movies that were subpar. Now, a couple of those have gained some cult following since that time, but Harlem Nights was not a big deliverer. Boomerang was not a big deliverer. And The Distinguished Gentleman was a bomb. I saw Distinguished Gentleman in the theater. I remember seeing it in the theater. I didn't hate it, but I was a teenager, so right. It was fine.
I didn't have a choice. I had to see that because he's playing a character named Jeff Johnson.
Right.
So, That's where I was going with that.
So yes. imagine my heartbreak. this is an Eddie Murphy movie with my name on it, and it's not good.
Let's be honest for a second. The movies that Eddie has made since 1990, which of them are really good? Name me a great Eddie Murphy movie since
we can't name a great one, but Jason, you and I discussed The Nutty Professor, which was 96.
That's probably the biggest one.
It's probably enjoyable. The only one. It's probably the biggest box office. He got an Oscar nod for Dreamgirls.
That's fair.
I've seen scenes from it. I have not seen the movie, but the scenes that I've seen, I'm like, oh, Eddie can do some serious acting, and it was decent. And part of the problem with this is that he had seen what Denzel Washington and Wesley Snipes were doing, and he was like, I don't want to only be the comedy guy. I want to have some seriousness in this role. He also still had the infamous entourage that went with him everywhere that had gotten a bad reputation in Hollywood at that point. So you got three stinker movies and you have a bad rep. It seems to me that the answer in that equation is don't give him $15 million. Say, let's do this movie, but you need to take a pay cut and we need to devote more to the production of the movie.
You're absolutely right. He's in a slump at this point. If anything, Paramount should be saying, like, look, we'll rebuild you. You know, let's bring you back, but we want to cover our bases here. We got to, you know, 15 million. No, we're happy to give you 9.
So here's the deal. I saw him interviewed on the Arsenio Hall show, his buddy Arsenio Hall. Mm-hmm. And he said he was done with the Axel Foley character. And he said, I don't really need the money. I think the character has run its course. I don't think a smart aleck cop in his mid-30s is a great character. He said, so if you see me in a Beverly Hills Cop Part 3, you can know that they threw a ton of cash my direction. And here we are.
Wow. That we did. That they did. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So the plot of this movie is Axel. I mean, the plot is a little thin here, but
Silk is a little thin.
He's investigating these guys who are transporting arms from a government agency, and they're wrapped in Wonderworld towels. Mm-hmm. And that's how we get transported to California.
Is that what happened? I don't think that's what happened.
They pulled him out of the towels. It said Wonderworld.
Right. But if this had been a gun running movie, you got a relatively interesting action movie. Didn't it end up being counterfeit money? Isn't that what the big payoff was?
That's true.
Yeah. The most boring crime in the world.
And if we're talking about what brings Axel Foley back to Beverly Hills, let's be honest. It's the same thing that always brings him back to Beverly Hills. Someone has shot one of his close friends.
That's right.
And he's, you know, we've seen it in the first one. Then he had to go back in the second one because Bogomil got shot. Now it's Inspector Todd. You know, G Todd is how I've always known him. But, you know, his widow's calling him Douglas. So I don't know what's going on here. But, you know, Todd's dead. And he's got to go. You know, he doesn't care. F the government. He's going to find out who Todd's killer is.
Yeah, that's right. And the actor who plays Todd, we've talked about how he did a good job in a small part in part one and part two. They asked him to do a little bit out of his comfort range, I would say, in this one.
He needs to be yelling in the office. He doesn't need to be going in with a gun with the bad guys in a warehouse.
He also needs to not be neutered. Because I love Todd in the first Beverly Hills Cop. He's loud. He's harsh. I'm afraid of him, right?
Right.
He is the boss that you don't want to piss off. And the second one, we start taking some leniencies with him. You know, Axel's doing a lot of stuff. And he's like, your butt's on the line here, Axel. And this one, he's just like, hey, you called off SWAT? Well, look, I'm just here to observe. So,
right. I'm just going to stand up here and
you're
do nothing.
You're Inspector Todd. Right. Yeah, what are you observing? I don't get it.
So I legitimately want to talk to you guys. I want to try to figure out the real answer to the question, what the heck happened with this movie?
Okay.
Because as we've pointed out, you have a world-class star, although he had three bad movies, but every actor in the world has had a few bad movies from time to time. That doesn't mean that when you bring a character that's been established in a franchise, that one's going to be bad. They had gone through some problems, right? When the studio said, we'll give you $25 million, the first drops off the list are Simpson and Bruckheimer. They're like, screw you guys. We're not going to be a part of this.
Right.
That's ridiculous. And they have every right to say that. They are still producing incredible movies at this point, and this is a slap in the face. So good for them for getting out. Joel Silver comes in and he's like, I can do this. I can save this movie. I need $70 million. No, I need $55 million. Like, double your budget and I can do this for you. The guy who's brought us the Lethal Weapons, the Predators. I mean,
Die Hard.
All of that stuff. I mean, him and D'Souza together, perfect combination.
That's right.
And they say no. And he's, well, you know, we'll give you 30. And he says, screw you guys. You don't have any idea what you're doing. And he leaves. So they've knocked off three of the best producers in the world at that time. They go through several script rewrites before they ever get to D'Souza. But I mean, still, you've got a top-notch writer. You have a big-time star and a big-time franchise. And I want to list for you in a row what Landis is doing. Okay. Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
I'll throw in the Kentucky Fried movie, right? We won't throw in his very first extremely low-budget schlock movie.
We'll
exclude that one. All right. So here we are in order, just the movies, not going to mention videos or any other jazz. Kentucky Fried movie, National Lampoon's Animal House, The Blues Brothers, American Werewolf in London, Trading Places, Twilight Zone, Michael Jackson's Thriller, Into the Night, Spies Like Us, The Three Amigos, Amazon Women on the Moon, and Coming to America. That man was Midas in the 80s. He did not make a bad movie. So how the heck did this happen?
I feel like one of the big problems here is that your star is making one kind of movie and your director is making another kind of movie. You know, you mentioned that, you know, no one wants to see the 30-year-old sarcastic cop, and he wants to be a little more serious. He wants to show some range. He really wants to do like a serious cop action film. And he doesn't want the shenanigans that he's already been doing. However, Landis, that's exactly what he wants. That's what Paramount wants. That's what everybody wants. We want Axel Foley to be Axel Foley. And Eddie is having a hard time with this. And you see it in his performance. It's not the Axel Foley that we fell in love with in 1984.
I heard John Landis say that he thought Eddie Murphy sabotaged the movie. He was intentionally choosing to not be funny in the funny parts.
I'm not going to say that he's choosing not to be funny. I'm going to say making this movie as the farcical comedy that John Landis was making was the wrong choice. Maybe Eddie didn't want to do what John Landis was doing, but Eddie was right. He was right. He should have been more serious. What we had at the beginning, I mean, just think about the beginning of Beverly Hills Cop 1. His buddy comes in, they're having a good time. It's a little sad about him getting out of jail and he's having a hard time. And then he's executed in the apartment building. I mean, it's horrific. And what you have is a serious movie with a lead actor who is funny at times.
That's right.
Which, if you think about Die Hard, that is exactly what Die Hard is. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of movie D'Souza probably wrote for this. But then Landis comes in, and I started thinking about this. Yes, everything he touched was gold. But which of those movies that I listed was an action movie?
None,
actually.
Zero of them. Yeah. The only action that you see in any of those movies that I can think of, I mean, you've got the ludicrous end scene of The Three Amigos, of course.
Yeah.
And you've got the ludicrous Spies Like Us action, and you've got the ludicrous Blues Brothers action where the car flips around and there's the chaos. But it's all of the action is for comedic effect. There are no action sequences in any of John Landis's movies that are actually exciting, which is what action should be bringing to you. You should be on the edge of your seat. That's the purpose of action. None of John Landis's movies accomplish that. What we have instead is O.J. Simpson's silly body flying in the streets, seeing his rubber head get smashed. We have absurd big bullet holes going into cars. We have Police Academy. That's great if that's what the movie should be. But Beverly Hills Cop movies should not be that. That is not how they were established. That is not what they should be. You can't take a Die Hard and make it into a Naked Gun.
This movie was doomed from the beginning because we start off, we see Axel. He's laying out the game plan for the other officers. We're going to take down these guys inside this chop shop. It's looking good. Even though Inspector Todd's like,
Right.
I'm a shell of my former self. But when you go inside and you see these arch criminals singing and dancing,
that's it.
I was like, we already just went off the rails. And that's like 5 minutes in.
Oh, man, I had blocked that out of my mind. I had forgotten about that. Oh, my gosh. Like that scene was so long and so painful.
Barry.
And the song was terrible.
Song was terrible, and I bring it up because you like you said, Police Academy. We're in a Police Academy movie from this point on.
By the way, did you recognize the lead guy, the lead chop shop guy?
I recognized him, but I couldn't place him.
He's the bartender in Three Amigos, directed by John Landis. So
he is, yeah.
And you also have Alion, who gets shot. So you have that weird. You get the song and dance number, then you have guys who get blown away and killed, but yet their deaths still seem
farcical,
weird, yeah,
yep,
cartoonish. And then you have the bad guy who should be Hans Gruber or Victor Maitland or somebody with real menace, looks in the back of the delivery truck or whatever and is like, yes. And he gives that over-the-top, double-fisted. Gosh, yeah. That guy sucked.
He looked like a used car salesman. Why do they have him playing a villain?
Terrible. He's terrible. You know what else is terrible, though? Well, you know, because I don't want to lose this before we get off this scene. Any action movie has to have a suspension of disbelief. A little bit. You look the other way on some things. But one thing I can't look away from the time Axel steals the red sports car to tail him, the truck with the ludicrous dummy. He fires, I counted this because I painfully watched it twice just to make sure my math was right. He fires 32 shots from what looks like a 9mm Beretta without reloading.
Uh-huh.
And that's I'm not even counting the shots that he fires inside the chop shop or outside the chop shop, just while he's driving and firing 32 shots without reloading.
Okay, let's backtrack a tad here.
Okay.
Let's talk about what works before we totally dismantle this movie. D, lead us off, bro.
I know that you asked me this question like a week ago when I watched the movie.
Yeah.
And I really kept an eye out for what works in this movie.
Okay.
I got nothing.
Nothing?
I have zero.
Nothing? Wow.
Does the writing work?
Nope.
Does the directing work?
No.
How about the acting?
Nope.
How about the music?
Negative.
Yeah. How about the stunts?
No. Well, okay.
Come on.
So let me say this, because there were a couple of times that I went, hey, and then I went, no. Or I went, what is, well, that was good. But so one of the times I was like, hey, it was the cameo of George Lucas. And I'm like, okay, well, at least we got George, but what a total waste. It wasn't funny. It didn't move the plot along. If you're going to have George Lucas in there, have him get shot or have him, you know, have him kick somebody's butt. Do something.
Excuse me. Hey!
That's not fair.
Maintenance, I got to go grease the chain. Yeah, dry, Sam?
Sorry.
Come on, let's go.
You know, have him make a wisecrack as he walks through. But I mean, literally, he's like, this sucks. I'm going to go home. I mean, it was just like, what? So it didn't make it to the positive column. And then the stunts, I was too distracted by the fact that I was going, why the fuck is he doing this? Before I finally went, well, they got a good stunt guy to do this stuff, but it's completely pointless. So I can't put that in the positive column either.
Okay. So I did write down that George Lucas's cameo was a positive, but I also agree with you. He did nothing. It would have been funny if he had said something like, this place doesn't have a Star Wars ride. Let's go home.
Yeah.
Poke fun at yourself in some way.
Yes. Dude, that would have made the positive column for me if he'd have just said that line right there.
I'm for hire. I'm ready.
You know, I didn't have George Lucas in what worked or what didn't work. He was Switzerland at this point, but D just won me over to the fact that he doesn't work, because just from his performance, you would assume he's just stopping by the set to visit Landis maybe. And Landis says, oh, come on, just jump in front of the camera for a minute. Because any kind of Star Wars joke would have been, or an American Graffiti joke, anything would have just killed as opposed to what he did say.
Sure.
There are no less than 5 cameos in this movie. Did you know that? I knew about George Lucas. John Singleton's in the movie. I didn't catch him.
Joe Dante's
Wait, director John Singleton?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where he is, because it was an absolute waste of a cameo. But literally, like, there are a handful of cameos in this movie. I was able to catch George Lucas, and that was it. The rest of them were even a bigger waste than him.
Why didn't we get a cameo from Taggart or Bogomil?
I can tell you about Bogomil.
Okay.
Because Cox read the script and they asked him why he wasn't in the movie. And he said, because I read the script.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
John Ashton was initially on, but then had quote unquote scheduling conflicts and didn't make it. My guess is he also read the script.
Yeah.
While we're on that topic, is it too soon to talk about what this movie could have been, like, based on some of the scripts? Well,
I'm
waiting
to hear you guys tell me what I missed, which is what works in the movie.
Jeff, why don't you tell us what works we'll say that. And then what could have been?
All right. I can feel D's eyes on me here, because now he's going to be like, no, that didn't work. But for once, I feel that Murphy had a chance to have some good chemistry with a female character. And Teresa Randall, I did like her to a degree. I know why you're laughing. I know why you're laughing.
That way you're getting out of this. I did my homework. I'm bringing this up. You know that text thread last night. He talks about almost kissing Robin Givens. And Jason's like, except that's not Robin Givens. And he's like, what? And I'm like, he's right. That's not Robin Givens. And he's like, oh my gosh, it's not. It was the great value,
Robin Givens.
Yeah. For years, I've always known Robin Givens as sitcom head of the class, Mike Tyson, Beverly Hills Cop 3. Well, you know, a couple bad decisions there. And then you guys are like, no, that don't put this on Robin Givens. So, I did think the chemistry between Foley and, you know, I don't remember Teresa Randall's character's name.
Problem.
But yes. I liked the interactions. And maybe that was because of Murphy trying not to be the clown and trying to be a little more Denzel, as D was pointing out. But I thought their chemistry was good. I was buying into it. Another thing I liked, you know, we talked about the stunts, you know, the action. I did enjoy Foley going out on the spider ride and trying to say, and, you know, not trying. He does save the kids. It's a little ridiculous, obviously. It's a little more far-fetched than him hanging off the back of a truck in a high-speed chase. But it was nice to see him doing something again. I'll say that.
Can I jump in on that right there?
Please.
Because that's on my good list, right?
Okay.
The stunts, and which we know John Landis has a history of being a stuntman.
Yeah.
That's a painful subject. Maybe we got to start right there. That,
but yeah. But the stunts on the spider were really good. Mm-hmm. Jumping from car to car, but also totally unnecessary, which we talked about. And yeah. then intermixed with that, he's rescuing kids, which he's one arm holding a piece of rope that's, you know, a quarter of an inch thick that would just like yeah. slice his hand in half. And then they got into this predicament because the stupid bad guys are like, bring that guy down. And like, he'll be down in 30 seconds, sir. No, bring him down now.
Now.
yeah. So I did think the stunts worked, although it was ridiculous to get to that point.
I did,
keep going.
I did not watch the movie twice. Shockingly, yeah. I know. Did you watch the movie twice, Jason?
Yes, I did.
Did, and you said, Jeff, you said you watched it twice to count how many times he shot the gun yeah. while he was doing the car chase, right?
If, I feel like you could say I watched it twice.
If if I had watched it twice, my counting would have been how many times you saw the interworkings of the Ferris wheel gears intercut with the action. Because
yeah. yep.
I was like, guys, can you spoon feed it to us anymore? We get it. You could have done yeah. the sparks on the control panel. We wouldn't have, but it was like Wile E. Coyote and his Acme machine. How many shots of the gears popping, squeaking, breaking did we need to see to understand something's going wrong?
Keep going, Jeff. Good stuff.
I've only got one more, sadly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And,
shocker.
And you know, I would want to put this in D's cameo list, but I know we're not counting him as a cameo, but I love anytime we get a chance. And typically it's the 80s and the 90s when he was doing his best work. But at the beginning, we get a quick shot of actor slash stuntman extraordinaire, Al Leong, who dies in the chop shop. You know, in Mr. Endo is in here. Yeah. So it was not like when I saw him, I was like, nice to see you.
Another you know? Total waste.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely a waste of his
gets
talents,
killed but, and then he shoots red paint on his face.
He didn't take an ice cream cone to the head, so I guess he's doing better.
Oh, that's true. That death was worse. Okay, so that's all you got in the good column?
Really, that's all I got. You know, and I was reaching to be, if I'm being honest.
Can I add a couple more to it, and then
we absolutely,
can,
yeah,
we move on.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
All right, so I've got the stunts. I've got Judge Reinhold. I think Judge Reinhold is the only guy that's really trying to do anything to uplift this movie. Now, does he do it? No. Does he get it? No. He's trying. He's trying his best.
Going back to our chat, our text thread, I think I said something along the lines of, I really feel sad for Judge Reinhold because he's in this. I mean, the cartoony job title that he has at, you know,
DDOJSIOC.
Yeah, there you go. It's like, come on, let him be a hero, or let him play the fun Billy that we like. Don't do this to him, though.
The worst of it is the scene that should be the saddest, where he gets shot. We should be at that moment. We should be devastated and like, oh my gosh, did they just kill Rosewood? We should mm-hmm. be flabbergasted, except that he has him blown back and his arms and legs flail out in a spread eagle. And he looks like Mr. Magoo with his face. He is the cartoon buffoon in the time that should be the most meaningful shot in the movie.
I completely forgot what happened to him at the end of this film. And when Foley is sitting there with Hector and they've both been shot, and then Billy stumbles out and he is just bloody mess and he's not smiling and he kind of falls. I was like, wait, they didn't kill Billy, did they? And then you see Axel like, oh, he's gonna need the hospital. And they're like laughing at him. I'm like, hey man, you're right. One of your closest friends just stumbled out covered in blood and he's been shot to pieces and he just collapsed. And you guys are just sitting there laughing at him.
All right, I got two more things that work. Ready?
All right.
I got Billy's drink. The giant blue thing with umbrellas.
That's Billy.
Yeah,
okay. That's Billy. That is Billy.
Right? Excuse me, three things. I thought Axel in the Okie Dokie mascot character had a couple of funny moments. When the kid punches him in the nuts mm-hmm. and he calls the little kid a little MF-er, that cracked me up.
Hey, listen, kid. I'm Okie Dokie and I changed the steps. You got a problem with that?
You're supposed to be nice to me no matter what I do.
Oh, you little fucking ass.
And then John Landis sporadically throws in impossibly beautiful women all over the place. Anytime I go to an amusement park, it's moms that should wear long pants. Other than that, it's time for the bad list.
So I'm just going to throw this out there. The couple of the cameos that you might have missed.
Okay.
Mr. was Al Green.
Okay.
Music artist.
Okay.
We already mentioned John Singleton. He played a fireman.
Okay.
Martha Coolidge is in it. Did you guys know that?
Oh
no!
Yeah, she's one of the security people. Again, a completely missed opportunity. But Martha, in case our listeners don't know, Martha Coolidge, real genius, Valley Girl. I mean, she's a well-known director.
They'll get tickets to Six Flags for doing this, I guess.
I don't even know.
Okay, so let's deconstruct this movie. What is wrong with this movie from a big picture?
Okay. So I really, really did struggle trying to figure out, like, because I've seen Quentin Tarantino talk about how when he was about to become a director, when he was about to direct his first movie, he got to be a part of the Sundance Film Festival, like the grooming of directors thing that they do, right? Which means he sat with world famous directors, and I don't remember who he sat with, but basically his concern was he had seen really bad movies and he had seen really good movies, and he couldn't really, you know, he didn't have it within him to go, how do I know I'm not making one of these bad movies instead of these good movies? And we would think at this stage, John Landis would know the difference, right?
Yeah, right.
But what the guy, what the whoever his mentor was like, you don't have to worry about that. You are going to be paired up with cinematographers who know what they're doing. Gaffers and set designers and production managers and all of these people, that you have to trust them to do their job right, and you do your job and you don't have to worry about the rest. And so I know what I know about John Landis, and I'm going, where did the cinematographer go wrong? Where did the production design go wrong? Where did the editing go wrong? And I can tell you that I see problems in all of those features, right? We've already identified that this is a diehard movie that they tried to make into a police academy movie, which is big fail for the director, right? There's no question. But even that shouldn't have been the death knell that it is for this movie. But if you look at the framing and the shot choices in this movie, if this is John Landis making these decisions, he has absolutely lost his touch at this moment, and he doesn't ever get it back. If it's he's relying on the cinematographer, then let me look at the cinematographer. Oh, yeah, he hasn't done anything worth a flip in his entire life that wasn't somehow associated with John Landis. Same thing for the editor. They are sub-quality producers of their craft. Editor, cinematographer, production designer, all sub-quality. So I think you put the sub-quality characters of a core group in with a director who has one vision that is completely antithesis to the star's vision and the writer's vision, it's a recipe for disaster.
Jeff, what went wrong for you?
What he said was spectacular, and it's absolutely true. It's a lot of what's wrong with this film. Me personally, when I watch this, I think I got to lay some blame on Eddie Murphy, because you are the star of the franchise. You have $15 million in your bank account to do this one, and you don't want to play ball. You're wanting to make a different kind of movie from everyone else. And I understand, you know, there should have been a compromise, because as Dee pointed out, doing this John Landis's full way would not have been a fun movie. It wouldn't have been a good Beverly Hills Cop movie at all. But you gotta find a compromise there. And for me, when I'm watching this, I think one of the biggest laughs I got, one of the only laughs I got, was probably when we see Bronson Pinchot.
The art gallery is completely bankrupt in the toilet. Why? Because we had an owner who was obstinate and stupid and ignorant. You shot him, remember? You remember him?
Yes, I shot him. What are you doing there?
I'm doing guns. Come and look.
Show up and, you know, do the whole thing with Serge. And it was just him giving us the line that he gave us in Beverly Hills Cop 1, you know? And when get the fuck out of here. I found myself smiling. I was like, okay, he's trying, you know, at least. But, you know, Eddie Murphy, I get it. He's coming off a string of flops, and, you know, stories from the set said that he was really depressed and he wasn't happy with the direction it was going. I know there's that history with him and Landis. So I just feel like Eddie was a big part of the problem, but Landis owns half of it, because he probably shouldn't have been paired up. You know, if you know that this is a toxic relationship,
right?
Why are we even talking to Landis? You know, and how many directors do we have in this doing cameos? Like, one of them wasn't available to take the helm. That's where I land with it. I've got plenty of nitpicks, but if we're talking big picture stuff, it's the relationship between Murphy and Landis that sunk this.
I don't want to be the guy that just says bad job cinematographer. So I'm glad you brought up the Serge scene. Mm-hmm. Serge. Why do you say it's Serge? Sounds like a energy
that was funny.
Drink, right? Okay, yeah. Funny. One funny line, right? So just in that scene alone, I'm like, here is a part of the movie that could actually be funny and play funny. Mm-hmm. And what we're getting from our cinematographer is 3/4 close-up, followed by a reaction shot 3/4 close-up, by another reaction shot, three-quarter close-up, rotating as though we are watching a soap opera. I mean, give me every third shot, give me a three shot, give me a two shot. But no, it is Eddie Murphy, three-quarter shot, Bronson Pinchot, three-quarter shot, Judge Reinhold, three-quarter shot, over and over and over again, and never them all three in the same shot or two of them in the same shot. And I'm like, these are guys who went to their trailer during the scene and one at a time did their scenes, and we never get to see them together. It is a failure of cinematography and a failure of directing.
Back to Murphy. Murphy shot the coverage that they needed for him, and Landis, my understanding is Landis stood in for him so that Serge had someone to talk to and face off with.
I think you're dead on, Jeff. I think the toxic relationship between Landis and Murphy is the sickness that infected this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Murphy famously said in Rolling Stone magazine that Vic Morrow would work with John Landis before he did again.
That's cold-blooded thing to
say. Dude, that is cold.
What do you think, Jason? What's your take on where it went wrong?
Well, I think that they got the tone wrong, right? D talked about how this is a Police Academy feel. Mm-hmm. The original, even part two, was a gritty police drama that a funny mm-hmm. guy just stumbles into. The yeah. action was real. There were real consequences to bullets and car crashes. I think back to that moment in the end of Beverly Hills Cop when they've captured Axel and he's looking at Victor Maitland and he said, if anything happens to her, and then the bad guy leans in and is like, I'm all ears, you know,
mm-hmm.
he said, I'll kill you. And that's a real mano-a-mano with real malice moment. And in this, you've got okie-dokie dance and you've got stupid bad guy and just ridiculousness. You have no meaningful malice or consequences of any sort in this movie.
Victor's reaction to that sequence, that would be a neat trick.
Right.
It's yeah. just as menacing. You've got two guys who are badasses who are facing off, and that's awesome.
Right.
You take the auxiliary scene from Beverly Hills Cop 3. It's the guy getting the award at the podium and Axel crashing the show. And then one comment about killing his friend or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they start wrestling around and punching each other
like
on the stage.
Like the Three Stooges. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the third time we saw him, you know, have to be pulled off of the head security guy, which while we're talking about it, you've got John Saxon in this movie. Why are you wasting him? If we know that he's one of the bad guys and he's the boss of the killer, Inspector Todd's killer, why aren't we using Saxon?
Right.
A lot more.
He does nothing.
Nothing.
Okay. I got another thing that I think was bad, but I don't quite know how to fix it.
Okay.
So this is a 1994 movie. They don't have the rock and roll soundtrack of the first two movies. There's no MTV video that goes along with it. There's no hit song. You do have an NXS song that I think is pretty good, but I don't really remember it being popular or anything. Or
I think the only two times I've heard that NXS song are the two times I've watched the movie.
Right.
It's kind of hidden in the movie, honestly.
Right. And then you have the great value version of Axel F. It's cringeworthy. Nile Rodgers is not a nobody. This guy produced Duran Duran. He made the soundtrack for Coming to America. I mean, he's a successful guy. Miss badly on the music.
But again, I'm gonna lay that off on the production company. They were trying to make a kid movie, and mm-hmm. I guarantee that they pulled him in and they said, we want this to sound more like a Chuck Jones soundtrack.
It really does play as a kid movie with F words.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely does.
And exploding squibs and dead bodies.
And when you get shot, you get launched back 15 feet.
Right.
From a handgun.
We haven't even mentioned the Annihilator 2000, the boombox bazooka.
I was hoping not to.
Bronson Pinchot's Serge. Serge actually has the funniest part in the movie, which is a problem when you pay Eddie Murphy $15 million to be the star. Mm-hmm. But then he's selling a machine gun, missile shooting.
Microwave oven.
What?
How do you go from making drinks for people in an art gallery to selling the warfare that he has in this booth, these designer guns that he has?
It's high-end warfare.
It's just ridiculous.
I got one other thing that stood out to me. And I literally, as I watched this for the second time this week, I said, what are they thinking? So Eddie Murphy shows up at his hotel or wherever he's staying. I don't even really know. And there's Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave, who is, you know, the Walt Disney character. So Walt Disney shows up to basically say, our COO has been missing for weeks. What? In halfway through the movie, we find out the COO is missing. I don't think we ever see him again. What happened to him?
He gets shot.
That's to Uncle Dave?
That's the he's a plot point. We have to fall in love with him in that scene, despite the ridiculousness of whatever plot point he's bringing. We have to know that he is actually a good guy. He's not a bad guy.
Uncle Dave.
By the way, I know I texted you guys, but for our listeners, do you know who Uncle Dave is?
You told me, but I didn't know.
Oh,
it's Wilbur off of Mr. Ed.
And like I told you, I know him as the voice of Scrooge McDuck.
He's
the one guy who's done more Scrooge McDuck work than anyone else. He did DuckTales. He did Mickey's Christmas Carol. Watching that, I was like, you could sort of hear a little Scrooge McDuck in his voice every now and then.
His original version of that accent, as far as I know, is on the Time Machine, the original like 1960s Time Machine. He's the guy who kind of has the closing monologue, and he's got a Scottish accent in that one as well.
Can we talk about Uncle Dave's shooting real quick?
Please, because go right ahead.
Are we really led to believe that he's shot and then within minutes of being at, you know, Axel takes him to the hospital. I don't know who stripped him, by the way, but he's... You know, he's heading in, you know, gunshot wound, and he's, you know, without his shoes, his shirt, everything. But then, like, within minutes, all of LA knows that Uncle Dave's been shot. This is 1994.
HIPAA did not exist in 1994.
Yeah, I guess not, because
somebody famous comes in the hospital, the nurse is on the horn.
Right.
Yeah, everyone's like, do you hear Uncle Dave got shot? And like, you know, we got the racist cops who, you know, I mean, Eddie Murphy just, you know, Axel just asked them where the coffee machine is. And then they're like,
oh, yeah, they're like, know, he was shot.
A black man shot Uncle Dave.
Yeah.
Is he the only black man in Beverly Hills at this point? Come on.
Oh, it is Beverly Hills.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, there's another failure. Did any of this movie look like Beverly Hills to you guys?
No.
Not once.
No.
Not once.
And they were actually outside of the Beverly Hills police station. But I don't want to see the real Beverly Hills police station. I want to see Tony Scott or Martin Brest version, the high-end hoity-toity police station. That's what I want to see. Don't give me the real one.
Well, it's funny because he shows up to that box, and all of a sudden I'm like, is this the police department from Last Action Hero? Or are we actually in Beverly Hills Cop? For English, press 1. For this, you know,
That scene bugged the crap out of me too, because we know Axel is extremely intelligent. He's very competent. He's never over his head, and he couldn't figure out how to communicate with, I need to talk
apparently
to
not.
Detective Rosewood. And he gets out of his car and he just leaves it parked there. You know, the other thing I wanted to mention that I think this movie really suffers from is you don't have the Abbott and Costello or Laurel and Hardy between Taggart and Rosewood. And you don't have the heavy to kind of press back against Eddie Murphy's shenanigans.
You don't. Yeah. Because, I mean, remember, Taggart was in the original script. And when he passes on this, Hector Alonso just comes in. I know they said they rewrote it for him. But let's not watch it a third time. But think back to Hector Alonso, because he is basically, he's Taggart.
But he's not.
Yeah.
But he's not. Yeah. But it's like when, you know, hey, there's a shooting suspect at Wonderland and we're in Hector Alonso's car. He's like, Foley, you know, I was like, you don't even know Foley. You just met him 10 minutes ago. Like, I hated that they couldn't at least let Hector Alonso be a different character.
Okay. So my theory on a possibility here is that they spent so much money on, what was that ride? The Alien Attack? Is that what it was called?
Alien Attack.
Alien Attack. They blew their entire $10 million that was left over. They blew $9.9 million of it on that scene. And that's why they couldn't afford a decent cinematographer, editor, or set designer.
D, can I blow your mind for a second?
Sure.
That ride actually exists.
Shut
That's
up.
A real ride. I tell you, I can tell you this because I wrote it and it's awesome.
You've been on that ride.
I have been on that ride. Now,
where the truck comes coming down out of the hole, the flood waters come down the stairway.
Oh, it's intense. Yeah.
And the Cylons attack you.
No. Okay, so this is where we veer from what's real and what's in the movie. The movie has, they call the ride Alien Attack, and it's this really intense moment where you basically are in an earthquake, but we have Cylons from Battlestar Galactica just shooting lasers for no apparent reason. Yeah, do you remember the 70s disaster film Earthquake with Charlton Heston?
Yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah.
I rode this ride at Universal Studios 20 years ago, and it's the earthquake ride. So you get on this little tram, and because it's Universal Studios, you're just supposed to be like going to see the park. And when you're in this subway, they freak out and they're like, we're experiencing a quake. And I mean, what you saw in the movie is authentic. The ground just crushes and crumbles. This big gas truck comes falling down, and it's like gets right up on you. Steam, then the flood starts. It's awesome. I hope it's still there. This is like the heyday where, you know, you could ride the E.T. ride, King Kong, Backdraft, Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Earthquake was one of the best ones they had.
Nice.
All right, Jeff. So we've beat up on this movie quite a little bit. How could we have corrected this? What could this have been?
I think there's a lot of ways you could have corrected it, but let's just talk for a quick minute about what could have been with some of the different scripts. Dee mentioned at the beginning, we went through several rewrites. So I just for the listeners, let's talk about the ideas that all got shut down. Okay. Initially, we had a plot where Taggart and Billy and Foley had to go rescue Bogomil because he was being held hostage in London. Okay. And this is the one that everyone was like, we're on board. But production delays and arguing over salaries, a lot of stuff goes wrong. Ultimately, Ronnie Cox has to bail on it, and John Ashton have to bail on it.
Okay.
So that one goes away. But we love the idea of the fish out of water story just going to a different area. So
right.
There were two other stories that had Axel going to London. One of them had him teaming up with Sean Connery from Scotland Yard, which
– whoa.
That could have been kind of fun, I think, right?
Whoa.
Then that one apparently, got a lot of steam, but then I guess Connery wasn't too keen on it. Famous screenwriter Robert Towne wrote a draft where Axel has to deal with his celebrity status. It would make sense that a guy that does this kind of stuff, like he's in the news, he's in the papers. That got shut down quickly. There was one last idea for London where the villain was going to be based off the Cray brothers. And I don't know if you ever saw that Tom Hardy movie. They were famous gangsters in London in the 60s.
Okay.
But the idea was that they got captured in Detroit, and Jeffrey was responsible for getting them back to London. Their henchmen kill Jeffrey, cue Axel going to London to solve the murderer, you know, who killed Jeffrey, because that's, one of my friends got shot.
Jeffrey is Paul Reiser's character, correct?
Paul Reiser's character.
Okay.
And at that point, he was supposed to team up with someone from Scotland Yard they were looking at John Cleese. So John Cleese and Eddie Murphy.
That would have been great.
Teaming up to find Jeffrey's killer in London. That would have been fantastic as well. But we didn't get any of those. And ultimately, Paramount said, let's go to the theme park.
So you're saying that one of those ideas would have fixed the movie?
I think one of those ideas would have been better than what we got.
Well,
you know,
that's,
as yes. I mentioned before, being mugged and kicked in the balls would have been better than this movie. So.
Well, that's true. I want to live in a world where Axel transfers, like we catch up with him and he is he's a Beverly Hills cop. He has transferred. So now he has a headache for Taggart and Bogomil. He's, you know, Billy loves him. And then this thing happens and they got to go to London.
Did you guys hear about the Beverly Hills Cop TV show?
Yeah.
That they actually shot a pilot for?
Whoa.
Yeah.
I got to hear about this.
Had the guy from Tropic Thunder.
Yeah. And it was actually.
What do you mean, you people? That guy.
Oh, okay, that guy.
Apparently he was supposed to be Axel Foley's son, and Eddie was supposed to come back for the pilot and kind of kick it off and turn it over to him.
He was the chief. Axel Foley had taken the chief spot, but he was there for the pilot, but the studio were like, okay, well, you got to be a recurring character. And he was like, wait, no.
Just pass the torch. I would have watched Al Pacino. Al Pacino, that is, playing Axel Foley's Axel Foley Jr., I'm guessing. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
You want my fix for the movie?
Yeah.
I would think it would have been great if we would have had a Beverly Hills Cop Crocodile Dundee crossover. What do you guys think about that?
I read about that. Who was it that suggested that. And Murphy was like, absolutely not. I don't remember who it was. It was
that was producer, at least, but as far as all of that goes, that was a right decision. I feel like that was something that the production companies were pushing for, that that Eddie Murphy was right and standing his ground and saying, no freaking way am I going to do that.
How about this idea? How about Riggs, Murtaugh, Foley, and Getz?
No. We do that is lame ass Happy Days bull crap. You do not do that with an established franchise. No
crossovers for you, D.
No, sir. No.
All right.
I can say this. They wanted to shoot Jeffrey, right? They wanted to shoot Paul Reiser. And I would have been at the theater. I would have been like, okay, we're going to shoot a guy again. This is really our hook every single movie.
Every single time.
Can we try something else? So the kidnapping idea, that sounds like a good plot.
Mm-hmm.
And who, in my mind, who better to kidnap than Judge Reinhold? Because you fear for him because you love him. He's a big teddy bear.
Yeah.
And so you have Axel Foley having to really team up with Taggart, where they're pitted against each other. They're now playing the married couple, right? They're now playing the Abbott and Costello part. I could see that. They play off each other for comedy. We have a vested interest in rescuing Billy. That seems to me to be a much better plot scenario than what we got. But what we got, we ended up back with, well, let's shoot a guy and have him go try to investigate.
Jason, if we could jump into your DeLorean and take D back to Paramount in 1993, I think the serious shit you're going to see is an amazing Beverly Hills Cop 3 film, you know, screenplay by James D. Graves, because I would love to see that movie.
Okay, well, let's get into it. The moment has arrived for final judgment. You're last.
Okay.
Jeff, you're first.
I'm shocked to say I would happily watch Jaws 3D every day of the week if it meant avoiding watching this once a week. This one, way better than Beverly Hills Cop 3. Jaws 3 over Beverly Hills Cop 3. That's my final judgment.
Okay.
How about you?
Well, let me put you on the spot real quick. I want to ask this question. Rank the following six movies. Jaws 4, Superman 4, Alien 3, Last Action Hero, Jaws 3, Beverly Hills Cop 3.
I'm going to go first to worst. Jaws the Revenge. You know, I love it.
Yep.
Here's where you both hiss at me. Alien 3. And I'm talking about the director's cut. And Jason, I sent you the director's cut. So you have, you know. I
still have homework to do. Yes.
Yeah. Number three, Last Action Hero. Because it's just a fun film. Number four, Jaws 3D. Number five, Beverly Hills Cop 3. And in last place, drill down like 170 feet of crap and then get to number six. It's still Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Not because of how bad it is, even though it's really bad. It's just, it broke my heart because it should not have been that bad. And I know we've talked about all that, so I won't get into it. But yeah, that's my ranking of these six.
Okay, so this is my final judgment now between Jaws 3 and Beverly Hills Cop 3. This is no contest. I know that going into it, I was the biggest Jaws 3 fan of the three of us. Clearly, Jaws 3 is immensely more enjoyable. I mean, it is not even close. It is way, way tilted in the favor of Jaws 3. I think there's fun to be had in Jaws 3. There is no fun to be had in Beverly Hills Cop 3. It is a disaster. It's a divorce. You know, it's an abomination. So here's my metaphor I want to give you guys, okay? Jaws 3 is like you go to SeaWorld and the killer whale exhibit that you went there to see is closed and, you know, the whale is sick. And, oh, man, that stinks. And then you go to the dolphin thing and they're like, oh, the dolphins are sick today. They can't perform. I'm like, oh, man, well, that stinks. Well, at least I still get to watch the water skiers and, you know, I get some cotton candy and have a Coke or whatever. Beverly Hills Cop 3 is like pulling up and the moose outside tells you the whole park is closed. Your vacation is shut down. There's nothing for you here. Park's closed. Moose outside should have told you. Dead on arrival. Absolute crap fest. Okay. Now then, ranking my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Jaws the Revenge, number one. This is first to worst.
It's the best.
It's the best.
Okay.
Okay.
It's the best. Yeah.
Last Action Hero, number two.
You walked out of that, right?
He did. He walked out of that.
Walk out of that. In third place is Jaws 3. Still fun. I like it. I have fun with it. I don't care. Slot number four, the terrible, hated Alien 3, where they kill off Hicks and Newt in the first 10 minutes. I hate that movie. And it's in fourth place. Fifth place is Superman 4. It's atrocious. It's awful. He points at the China wall or the... He points at the Great Wall of China and it rebuilds itself. It's ridiculous.
I think they should change it to the China Wall. I think that's a good thing.
And drill down 50 feet of crap, and that's where you will find Beverly Hills Cop Part 3. It is the worst movie that we have covered at the Surely Can't Be Serious podcast. Spike in the football.
Your ranking wasn't too different from mine. I'm a shadowy reflection of you.
A nudge.
All right.
You might. Never mind.
Now you're being nasty.
Speaking right, of nasty, we got to hear D's.
I know. Let's hear it.
Okay. So Jaws 3D was a horrific experience. So I've walked out of two movies in my life. Two.
Okay. And they are?
Showgirls. Which I was an adult when I saw Showgirls. And I was excited. I even told I'm telling my son, not that easygoing dad that talks about this kind of stuff, but I literally said to him, I'm like, there was a totally hot girl who everybody was in love with off of this TV show who was going to go and be naked all of the time in this movie. And I'm in my early 20s, ready. And I walked out of that piece of crap. When I was seven, it's when I learned that you could walk out of a movie because my dad said, come on, we're going, we're leaving. And so I haven't seen this movie in 41 years. And I watched it again. And I have to say, my dad made the right decision.
Right.
It is a terrible, terrible movie. Beverly Hills Cop 3 is not even a movie. It's a joke.
Ooh.
Like, at least Jaws 3 is still a movie. It's a really, really bad movie. It's worse than Jaws the Revenge, but it's still a movie. There is a plot, as bad as it is. This movie is horrible. And I agree. It is the worst movie that we have covered. And I will come back to I will go through my list here in just a second. But I will say this, of all of these movies, it's probably the one that I would watch again, but I would do it with a notepad and a paper. So I could say to myself, how do I never do this? How does a director, how does somebody who wants to be a good movie maker, a good filmmaker, not do this? Because we know the talent that was involved, and somehow they still turned this piece of crap out. So I would really want to just study it like somebody studies a corpse.
Now, wait a minute. Just for the record, Jaws 3 better than Beverly Hills Cop 3. The words that we've been waiting all week for.
Jaws 3 is far and away better than Beverly Hills Cop 3. It's not even close. They're not in the same ballpark. Wow. They're not in the same universe.
Balaram is happy.
D is a true believer. Oh, that's great.
Okay, now rank the six.
Okie dokie.
Yeah.
All right. Best of the six that we've talked about, Alien 3.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's still David Fincher. There are lots of things wrong with it, but I would probably even watch that one again just to try to love it. And I want to see the director's cut.
Please
see what
do.
It was like. I mean, whatever they call it, because he said his director's cut would be to take it and burn the negative, right?
Yeah. That's right. He did say that.
And so then the next one on my list, like second best, is Last Action Hero. After that, Jaws the Revenge. After that, Jaws 3D. After that, I'm in agreement with Jeff, Superman 4, not necessarily because it's a worse movie, but because of what it did to a truly beloved franchise of mine. And that's why I still put Man of Steel on top of my list, because it brought that franchise back. I mean, gee-man-y. But yes, Beverly Hills Cop 3 does not qualify as a movie. It gets a zero. I have 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0 Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Wow. I love it.
True believer.
And I really didn't believe you guys that you're going to give me something worse than Jaws 3D, but you did.
It's hard to believe. It really is hard to believe.
Yeah.
With that collection of talent.
Yeah, you tricked me with a jelly bean that tasted like earwax and then gave me one that tasted like vomit.
I love the analogies on this show. They're top notch.
Jeff, thank you for being with us again, man. I hope you had a good time doing the What the Heck Happened series with us.
guys, you know I love doing this with you. I love the What the Heck Happened series. I'm here for it every time. I don't know what could be next, but sign me up, because I love talking bad movies. I don't love watching bad movies, but I love talking bad movies, especially with you two.
We've got a What the Heck Happened coming later this summer, if you're available. Okay.
I'm always available.
He's already shaking in his chair for this matchup.
Oh, honestly, boy. I'm excited for this matchup. Okay. Because these are actually movies that a lot of people like.
Right.
Okay.
We're doing Star Trek, the motion picture.
Okay.
Versus Star Wars, The Phantom Menace.
So the worst film of one franchise against one of the worst films of another franchise. And go. That's all I'll say for now.
There you go.
Because I could go either way.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
79 versus 99.
I love it.
Well, thanks for being here, bud. What do we got coming up next, D?
Okay, so we have another music episode coming up. We have Reckless by Bryan Adams versus Heartbeat City by The Cars.
That's right. Two big albums from 84. We're continuing in our 84 series before we kind of shift into 89, and that will be a banger of a series. If you want to come back for that, check it out.
Yeah, and guys, if you love this episode, please check out our Patreon episode where we cover one-hit wonders and other novel songs. It is cheap to join, only $5 a month or more if you want to get some prizes involved. But even if you're only $5, you get access to every single one of those episodes. Or if you just want to follow the page to see what we're doing, you can go on to patreon.com/Shirley Podcast and see what we're putting out there to see if you're interested. And be sure and go over and check out a Film By podcast that Jeff hosts with his friend Brad. They've got a few co-hosts that come in and do other things as well. Subscribe to them. Hit them up for their Patreon as well. And if you guys can't do that, give us a little 5-star and give us a review. It is a 5 stars because that's great. And then if you're in your review, if you want to tell us we suck eggs, then go ahead. We can handle that. Just don't give us 1 star because that'd suck.
Jeff, what do you got coming up for us, man?
I'll tell you, we're kind of doing a Peter Himes thing. Me and Andrew are going to talk about 2010, the year we make contact. Later in that week, we're going to hear from Scott and Dave on A Film at 45. They're talking about a little known Harrison Ford film called Hanover Street. I'm excited. I've never seen it. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to hear what those guys have to talk about. But Wednesdays we've got for all the Star Trek lovers, we got our phasers set to stun. Currently recapping the final season of Discovery, and Flashback Fridays. If it's not talking movies from 1996, it's celebrating the 45th anniversary of films from 1979. So we got a lot of fun stuff coming up.
Well, thanks again for being here, everybody. We will see you back here next week.